The Home Show with Sinead Ryan on News Talk.
Hello and you're very welcome along to The Home Show podcast. I'm Sinead Ryan, your host, and this is News Talk. Coming up this week, has the changing of the clocks got you dreaming of long sunny evenings out in the garden? Well, if so, you'll want a gorgeous patio to show off to your guests. We have a new Taoiseach in the next week or so, but what can Simon Harris actually do about the housing crisis with less than a year to the general election, we'll be finding out. And is downsizing a housing solution or just blatant ageism? We'll be asking a policy expert. And Natasha Rocketvine will be here to talk about the return of retro. If you'd like to get involved in the show, you can email us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. You'll find me over on Instagram at SineadRyan100. And you're very welcome along to the show this morning. Now, the changing of the clocks and a few relatively sunny days, rare as they were since then, might have you dreaming of a margarita in the sunshine of your own garden this summer. But what steps do you need to take when considering a new patio, and how can you make sure that your garden space is on trend? Well, joining me now is Andrew Tracy, Managing Director of Versatile. Is it Versatile or Versa?
Versatile.
We got the pun.
We're in Navan, Sinead, so only 20 minutes from the M50.
All right, you got the plug in early. Now, when it comes to an outdoor room, Andrew, I know that people are increasingly, even in rain-sodden Ireland, seeing their outdoor area as an extra room in the house. That has been seems to be on an increasing trend for the last number of years. And patios possibly are the breaker between having just grass growing in the garden and a few flowers and actually being able to use the space productively as a dining area and an outdoor dining room. But it can be hard to choose what surface is best. So give us some ideas about how you go about that if you're just looking at a kind of a grassed garden at the moment.
Yes, Sinead. We call it living outdoor space really now. It's become of growing importance, and we've had to develop the team. There were two or three specialists within the showroom to help people design to their requirements. So in the outdoor space, yes, you could be looking at a drab existing patio, and there's two or three different strategies that you can have for install. One being is taking up the existing patio, making sure that the surface is well drained, solid base, and basically it's simply laying the new tile on top of that existing structure. However, maybe you might just want to go onto a soft surface, like onto a grass, and keep it a simpler operation rather than having to concrete your whole area. And it can be as simply as that, onto a sand base or directly onto a grass surface if you're doing a walking area through. So when you're considering the outdoor space area, you're saying, okay, is this a kitchen leading onto a into another kitchen area? Do you want to cook outside? Do you want a fire pit? All these considerations.
All the pizza ovens now have taken off, and the barbecues are super special now. So I suppose that's a consideration.
It is. And what we found is a huge growth in the use of tile. And why is growth of tile is because of durability and cleaning and maintenance. So that mold growth and that green slime that can build up on your stone, you want to be easy clean, easy maintenance.
Yeah, because for years and years, decking was probably the most popular option. People loved the idea of the wood and it looked very, very nice. But there are issues with it because people are worried about slipping and falling and skidding on themselves and all that kind of thing. So I suppose then when you're putting down tiles, the sense is it lasts longer and you can put these non-slip options on it.
Now, when I hear non-slip, I go, I kind of think that's going to be hard to clean. But we have developed surfaces now that are actually non-slip, but are actually easy clean also.
Okay, so you're not going to wash
exactly.
You
won't. So the finishes that you can get for non-slip now for all the range of styles are available there. And what we found also that some people want to do cladding on the walls to actually match the tile. Mm. They want to build furniture, like plant pots or separate areas or even actual tables to match the actual tile itself. So to go, to the days of just supplying a sandstone is now over.
Yeah.
That we can do a full coordinated to inspire people really and achieve their dreams. Like, this is a place for relaxation, a place for meeting friends, family. It's become numerous.
Also, well, yes, but there's also a bit of patio porn about it as well, keeping up with the neighbours, isn't there? Because people get it done and then others say, oh, here, look at your man next door now. We have to have a look at that. So tell us, Andrew, then, for somebody putting it down, so don't just go out and buy your tiles. You have to get this whole drainage and where you're going to put it and plan your garden first, your ground first.
You do. Okay. You do. To not to use technical terms, but to get the base right.
Okay.
Yeah. So we would encourage people to come and visit our specialists. And even if they brought images and pictures with them of what they already have, and we can do a specific survey on their property and see how easy we can do it to simplify their life to make this happen.
Yeah.
But I actually never answered your question to do with decking. That's one of the biggest areas that we're zoning in on regarding slipping, and you're looking at saying, oh, this is a rotting material, where now we can do that in a tile. It's quite a simple operation of taking up the decking, and we can actually do the tile on a raised access, also ideal for balconies. So
And actually I had to look at some of the pictures that you showed me, and the tile, these are tiles, porcelain tiles, but they look like wood.
They
so
do.
They're like, people might be familiar with them because you see them sometimes in bathrooms or in kitchen cooking areas.
Yeah.
So they're like wood planks.
They are.
But they're actually tiles.
Yeah.
And is that a big thing now, a trend?
It is a big trend. Where we're finding that people want this timber look for whatever range of timber you want. You name it.
Oh, right. So you can get your oak or your walnut.
Oak,
or
walnuts, pines. Yeah. All the full range and sizes too. We always have a term here because it's an experience that you want for the customer to achieve their dreams of what they want.
Okay, so that's an interesting one, that tiled decking, because people mightn't be aware that you can get that and have that wood look as well. Now, the other thing that's very popular, and this is what I've chosen to do, although maybe you're telling me now I'm out of trend because I went with the old limestone look, is having that when your patio is right outside your garden, right outside your kitchen, having that true flow of a look. In other words, that the tile is the same.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, it has to be different, doesn't it? But it can be the same colour.
It does. It's very important to us, this area. We call it in and out, where basically it's bringing the outside in. And we like to have some customers want the exact same colouring, the same tile outside as, and what we basically do is make it frost resistant, 20 mil thick outside, 10 mil thick inside, same colouring, and then we have the slip additive onto them.
So it means then that if you're standing in your kitchen, it looks as if it's flowing all the way out, especially if you have one of those big windows, do you know, those down to the floor.
Down to floor windows or patio doors, that it just runs right through.
Yeah.
So in all our limestone range tiles and everything, and any sizes that you want. It's another important point, actually, is when you're selecting a product, we always would have a pro-European policy. Why? One of the reasons is, if you decide, oh, I want to extend further on, we want to be able to get you the same tile in 2-3 years down the road in the same colouring. So it's an important element.
Yeah, and they can crack and discolour and all that kind of thing. Now, one of the other styles that I know our listeners love, because it's a kind of a Marmite thing. Some people love it, some people don't, but it's the terrazzo.
Yes.
Now, this is like the speckled tile. So it's kind of little flecks of metallic or
exactly
kind of pink or whatever. Yeah. It's beautiful in bathrooms.
Yeah.
And does that work outside well?
It depends on the aesthetic you're trying to achieve. But we can even go further to answer your question. Yes, it can be used. It can be a bit overpowering if you're using it at a big area. Mm. But if you're using a small area of 10 square metres, and it can really lift the back of your home, that colouring. But you can get any Pantone now, any colours. We even launched there recently an old carpet effect external tile.
Right.
Metals.
Okay. Oh,
titaniums and copper and
disco
even a rust.
Floor. Brings
like
me back
a disco
to my
floor.
Blinkers days, dancing around the tin floor with my West Coast cooler and a handbag.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So we can recreate that.
Yeah.
Are people going a lot for colour, Andrew? Like, or are they sticking with the earthy tones?
Generally, they're sticking with the stone effects, what we were talking earlier, in and out. They do want larger formats, and they don't want this 600 by 600 sandstone or the decking. They want to express themselves more. We kind of have a term here, why shop when you can design? So that's a key. If someone is project managing this and giving themselves time, give themselves 6 weeks, 8 weeks, that they can pick whatever style they want, whatever design, whatever size they want.
Yeah.
Therefore,
and create something a little bit different.
Create something that you're not seeing everywhere.
Now, I know one of the things you mentioned there, fire pits and planters and all that kind of thing, and you can get those in made out tile if that's what you want. But one of the other things that has become a huge trend, and we featured it with Jennifer Sheehan actually some months ago, is the whole area of outdoor saunas. This has become absolutely a trend because they're not terribly expensive. And maybe people have gone off the hot tubs a little bit. The sauna gives you the real heat straight away. So do you find some customers looking for those now, and how feasible are they to put in a standard garden?
You know, over the 40-year history of Versatile, we've seen it hasn't been a meteoric rise. We're not going like the Scandinavians all of a sudden, but year on year, and especially since the pandemic, we have seen a growth in outdoor saunas, because sometimes you just don't have the space inside. So what's the next option? Outside. And back to what we're here about was the tiles as well. But with the outdoor saunas, we can even do one now where we actually have it complete as a container. And just drop it into your back lawn, pre-made in all the natural timbers. Now, we're not talking an infrared sauna here. We're talking a full
the coals and the steam and all
and
that.
A full radiant effect and the nice smells and that relaxing effect. But
what are we talking about then for one of those kind of pre-built, like modular saunas, I suppose we'd call them, that you can drop in? Are you talking about a couple of thousand euros there?
Yes,
onto a base of some kind?
Onto a base. And all you need is a power supply.
Okay.
So you're talking, you know, your saunas could be starting just around under 10,000 euros, where before it was way more. And that's a proper sauna, not an infrared one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So lots of things for people to think about then, and lots of places to go. Do you put in many kind of hot tubs still a thing, or people?
They are.
People gonna, oh, are they?
Yeah, okay, yeah. They are. Is when people want to go for a whole
spa. Wellness space.
Wellness area.
Oh,
one of your colleagues
strength.
Visited a showroom recently where we zone in an indoor spa, the home spa, where you have the hot tub, the sauna, steam, hammam, everything all in one.
Ma'am, would you go away? Oh, what have we become?
Yes.
Listen, do you know what? With the summers we've had over the last couple of years, I think it's probably something that more people will be thinking about. And that dash, I'm just thinking about it from the back of your garden back into the house after your sauna would be the equivalent of maybe dipping in a plunge pool. So listen, Andrew, thanks very much for telling us all about that. Where can people find you?
They'll find us Versatile. They'll look at our website, versatile.ie, where we have sections about spa and outdoor tiles in Beechmount Home Park in Navan, County Meath.
All right, fantastic. All right. Well, Andrew Tracy, Managing Director of Versatile, thanks a million for joining us on The Home Show today.
Thank you, Sinead.
Now, an ESRI report last week found that more than two-thirds of Irish people were living in homes that were too big for their needs. So could the much-touted idea of downsizing be a major part of our solution to the housing crisis? And what are the challenges faced by those who want to do it, and indeed those maybe who feel compelled to do it? Well, Dr. Nat O'Connor is Public Affairs and Policy Specialist with Age Action and joins me in studio now. Hi, Nat.
Hi.
Nice to see you. Now, Ireland also, I saw from Eurostat, has the highest under-occupancy rates across Europe. Okay, so it's not just that we know we're living in too big houses, but among our peers, that is the case. We're right at the top of the table compared to most other countries. Why do you think that is?
I think there's a range of reasons for those statistics. And if you look at other tables, we'll see that Ireland is actually near the bottom of the table for the size of houses. So what the first table tells us is we might have more bedrooms per person when you average it all out. But if you look at other statistics, it tells us we tend to build smaller house sizes, particularly in our towns and cities, than would be the case across Europe. So with swings and roundabouts, we might have more bedrooms. Doesn't mean we have more space to live in. From an age action perspective, obviously, we're concerned that there's a lot of implicit ageism or indeed blatant ageism when it comes to talking about older people taking up too much space or being in houses that are too big for them, that they don't need them anymore. Well, there's a huge variety of different needs among our older population. You know, sometimes an older couple might not be sleeping in the same bedroom because for various reasons, including the fact someone might have an illness that they're sleeping downstairs or they're using a medical machine. And, you know, so they have two separate bedrooms. They might be using bedrooms for children coming back from abroad. And part of the reason why we're in a different situation from other countries is, well, there's a lot in it, but we have a different type of housing stock, but also different expectations. A lot of Irish people migrated throughout the years, all the way up to the 80s and 90s.
And as a result, still are.
And still are. And so if I'm an older person living around Ireland, you know, I might be looking forward to my children or grandchildren coming to stay three or four times a year. And having that extra bedroom, or maybe two bedroom if there's grandkids as well, is a really important part of my life. And so to say that my house is too big for my needs, well, part of my needs is to spend time with my children and grandchildren who were forced to emigrate back in the day, or who have been forced today to go to a major urban centre to find work. And so they don't live nearby. So having extra bedrooms is important for Ireland in a way that might be different from some other European countries.
Now, some commentators might say, look, we've a housing crisis on. In other countries, people are more than happy to live in apartments. It's normal living in a city. We have not tended to do that only very recently. And therefore, you know, we can't afford the luxury of people having spare rooms and maybe we should live within the rooms that we need. Do you think there's any traction in that, or do you find that there is an implacability about people willing to face up to that?
Well, I think there's a lot of change happening in our housing market. If you look back, Ireland was a poor country throughout most of the 20th century. And so we built what we could afford to build in terms of houses built by local authorities or people built on their own land and tended to build a detached house. And it's still the case that many people, or nearly 40% of people, are living in one-off houses across the country. And so that's what we could afford to build as a country at the time. We're now building a lot more apartments. And the whole idea that you might live in an apartment, not just for a few years as a student, but that you might live your life in an apartment, bring up your kids there, be part of a kind of a compact, you know, city living. That's a new idea. It's going to take time for that to take shape. And we have to make sure we're building the right kind of apartments. We're building the right kind of supports and services around them. And for sure, there'll be older people who think that's actually quite attractive. You know, having an apartment that doesn't have stairs, having an apartment where I can go downstairs and a cafe is there, the doctor is there, the pharmacy is there. And that kind of living is totally normal across Europe.
We live in a very localised society. I mean, when you talk to somebody from Ireland and you're Irish yourself, you can nearly pinpoint a parish by the way they are. It might be the first question you ask, where are you from? Who do you know? All that kind of thing, because we are a village. So is it that people who may be reluctant to downsize might be persuaded if they could stay, this sense of place that we have, that they could stay put?
Absolutely.
So rather than kind of use the carrot rather than the stick, rather than saying your house is too big and what are you doing with all these spare bedrooms, maybe the trick is to say to people you can stay put down the road and free up your house for a family. Would more of your members be inclined to do that in age action?
Well, I think you're certainly onto something here, because the buzzword for this is aging in place. People want to age in their homes and in the communities where they've built their lives, because you have your friends, your family connections, your GP, your pharmacy. You're known when you go into the church or you're walking down the street of the town. You know people to see. That's all of the social connections of your life. And if you're not in paid employment, you know, you don't have those other outlets where you're meeting people. So it's all the more important that you have this social network. And for sure, people want to retain that in older age. They don't want to have to move long distance, even a few kilometres, because you could lose a lot of those connections, those casual connections that are an important part of our lives. But the choice often isn't there. because we simply don't have the stock. When we built housing estates, we tended to build a lot of three-bed semi-detached houses and we didn't build anything else.
So are we building too much for first-time buyers and not enough then for people who could be freeing up their homes for people trading up or buying for the first time?
Well, I think that's now the opportunity to build small blocks of apartments, single-storey dwellings or whatever it might be like that, and build them in the brownfield sites, you know, where we already have a housing estate and there might be a bit of, you know, green space to the side. Use that strategically to put in place some small apartments that people might think, going down the road, I might move into somewhere like that. You'd still be in the same neighbourhood. You'd still have all your connections, but you'd have a more manageable dwelling. But at the moment, for most people, that stock simply just isn't there.
Mm. What about, there was a scheme touted, and I mentioned it in my intro there at the top of the show, some years back. I remember having Shane Ross in here. If people remember him, talking about a kind of a granny flat or a granny tax relief, that if you split your existing house into two and pop granny in the attic, or maybe a returning son or daughter who's boomeranged back, and there were all going to be all kinds of incentives to do that, and then people never did it and never took off, and that was the end of it. But there are people beginning to do it now for their children, and do you think that's an option? In other words, for larger houses or bungalows maybe, you know, use half of it as, with an own door entrance, give people money to develop it and allow their family member to come back and live there as a separate dwelling.
Well, I think there's a long and good tradition in this country of, you know, looking after family, and if people have a bit of land, you know, allowing a house to be built, or if people have a big house like that, subdividing it in that way. But the important thing is that it should be a matter of choice, and it should be something people are happy to do, not something they're forced to do due to the economic situation. And unfortunately, I think a lot of the pressure at the moment is a lot of, you know, parents are looking at their adult children, and their adult children are still renting and they're paying through the nose for rent. They can't save for a deposit. And so they begin to look at what other options they might have, such as looking at the family home, how they might subdivide it. And that's, you know, it's a last resort for some people. And the risk would be that it interferes with people's independence. I mean, you know, if you have kids, you know, you love them, but you don't necessarily want to live with them as adults. And so at a certain point in time, you don't want to be forced into a situation where you're all going to be sort of sharing the same space again. Mm. Everybody is entitled to their own independence, to live differently. You don't necessarily want that degree of closeness. So the risk would be that it's been pushed on people due to the economic situation. Mm. But in principle, I mean, if people want to do that, sure, why not? But then you're into the practicalities. Often the finance is not available. If you're an older person, you can't get finance. And this is for downsizing or right-sizing as well as for converting your home. You might own your home outright, which could be worth $300,000-$400,000 or more. But the bank will say, we won't lend to you on the value of your home. We're not allowed to do that anymore since the crash in 2008. But instead, we'll look at your income, which might be a very modest income as a pension.
So they're asset rich, cash poor.
Exactly.
And they can't get a lending option to allow them to do the things they're doing. And this is why companies that do things like equity release or, you know, end up maybe kind of coming in as, they're very expensive, but coming in as kind of the, well, we can give you money, but it's going to cost you.
It's going to cost you a lot. I mean, I've looked at some of these equity release schemes, and where you might think you're getting 20% of the value of your home. They might give you 60,000 or 70,000, but you end up paying 200,000.
Yeah, double.
Because they'll end up owning sort of the value of your home, and they can be very expensive.
But what is the option, Nat? Because is it something maybe that we should be able to lend safely to older people and retired people who are on fixed incomes? Banks don't like doing that because if something goes awry, they don't want to be accused of throwing a pensioner out on the street.
Absolutely. I suppose there's a few things in this. One, I mean, the central bank has rightly stepped in to say no more asset-based lending, because that's what we did during the boom. And of course, that led to the crash because people said, oh, the value of my property is such and such, because it was an inflated value and it wasn't real. And of course, the whole thing came tumbling down. But you could have a scheme that says, look, if an older person owns their home outright and they're looking to right size, you could have a loan scheme which allows the asset to be taken into consideration for that kind of purchase only. Because I talked to a man who, you know, they had found the house they wanted to move into. It was smaller, manageable, for about 300,000. Mm. They owned their home worth 500,000, but they couldn't get the loan to allow them to buy for 300,000, knowing full well they'd be able to sell the house they owned for the best part of the 500,000 it was worth.
Mm. So and it's the bridging.
It's the bridging loan. And of course, the bridging loan is not a standard product. So it has to, you'd have to negotiate that as an individual. And the particular lender in his case just looked at his income and said, your income is too low.
Yeah.
And so,
because they have to. That's the central bank rules now.
That's the rule.
So what's the solution to
that? So you could step in. Well, the government could step in with the central bank and say, could we have a scheme to relax those rules in
just
particular
for this
cases?
Yep.
Or you could look at the local authorities. The local authorities can give mortgage lending. Now, they don't do it as much as they used to do, but you could create a scheme to where local authorities would lend to people based on the, to allow a right-sizing transaction, essentially, when everything was lined up. And the important thing is, you know, if you are moving home where you might have lived for 30, 40 years and you find the right place for you, you want the opportunity to go for that.
Without having to sell first and then hang around and
or not
buy,
have to wait two or three months for people to go through some sort of permission, you know, where you're filling out forms and all the rest of it.
Very close to be a state bank there. Aren't we trying to get rid of that idea, Nat?
Well, there's nothing wrong with a state bank. I mean, we have a mixed economy where we have private banks, and of course we own half the private banks.
Well,
and then
we
have the post office and all the rest of it. But I think what's important is that there are opportunities.
Okay.
That at the moment the market for lending to an older person has really narrowed.
Yeah.
That you simply don't have as many options. And we see there's a growing need, and there's going to be a growing need in future for older people to be able to borrow money.
Mm.
And if the market doesn't provide it or can't be facilitated to the central bank, then we have to look at our other schemes available.
Okay. Well, look, is it something then that you have thought about, listeners? Is it something you'd be incentivized to do? And I'm thinking particularly of older listeners to The Home Show who might say, look, if this and this and this was in place, some of the things Nat O'Connor suggested there, I would actually move. I would give up my house and I would switch on. Or are you like, not on your Nelly. I'm going to be carried out here. Let me know at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. I'd be very interested in people's views on this, because it is one of the other housing crises that we maybe don't hear enough about. Nat O'Connor, Public Affairs and Policy Specialist with Age Action. Thanks for joining us on The Home Show.
Thank you.
Now, in a few short days, Simon Harris will officially become the country's youngest ever Taoiseach. Minister Harris has already laid out his plans for the government he will lead, including securing more funding for the Department of Housing, which is the one we're always interested in on The Home Show. But with less than a year left before what we expect to be the next general election, what, if anything, can his government actually do to improve the lot of owners, renters and the housing market itself? Well, Gerard Howland is public affairs consultant, political commentator and a former senior government advisor. So he should know, and joins me now in the Home Show studio. Hello, Gerard. You're very
Hello.
Welcome. Now, look, it's kind of a funny time for Simon Harris to be entering the big chair, because he has a year to go, but he only has a year to go. What progress do you think in something as big as the Department of Housing, which isn't an easy win, can he actually make?
Well, I don't believe there's a year to go. I understand constitutionally the government can go until the 22nd of March 2025. In reality, for various reasons, I think that's very improbable. And in fact, it's much more likely that you're going to look at an autumn election probably after the budget.
Really? Okay, that soon. So he'll be looking for ratification much sooner than we think.
You'd have to completely abandon the government going abroad for St. Patrick's Day. That would become an election issue if they abandoned it. If you go before St. Patrick's Day, you have to leave at least a week or 10 days between the polling date and the date the Dáil meets, because at least one, if not several, constituency counts will go on and on. So it realistically means the last possible date for an election is about the 1st of March, which means a February election. And I don't believe the government will, of its own free will and volition, go for that.
And they don't like campaigning during the winter months,
exactly,
around Christmas time. So, but the alternative then, Gerard, is three elections then in 2024, because we have the locals and we have the Europeans.
And two referenda.
And two referenda.
Votes. We've had two referenda on the same day.
Yeah.
And then we'll have a patents referendum, I understand, on the same day as the local and European elections.
And then you're going to, what, pull everybody back again in the autumn, is that it?
Yeah, I don't think it's a great burden to go to vote every couple of months, given that it's the national election that you haven't participated in for nearly 5 years. So I wouldn't think that's an issue. But what is an issue for the government is timing. And if it doesn't go in the autumn, it's stuck in office over winter. And I don't think a March election, for the reasons I've outlined, are actually realistic.
Okay. So he has less time than maybe we think to do anything in that case. So some of the programme for government promises that were made on housing, some have had wins, and I want to acknowledge them because I think a lot of the time we give out about housing and the lack of housing and what we're not doing. But some of the measures that were in did happen. I'm thinking in particular one close to my own heart, the whole area of Fair Deal. We were promised changes to the rental and the sale of family homes, that families could actually rent them out or sell them and keep the proceeds and be able to ring fence them. That happened despite Mary Butler's objections to it. The use it or lose it planning permission on 10 or more units, is that something that you saw as a win? Using the Land Development Agency, some of that worked, some of it is still very much in abeyance. What do you see as left to do in the Department of Housing
well,
in this very short
time? Before you get to left to do, there are certain issues that must be done, like it or lump it. And one issue that will immediately face the new Taoiseach for decision, in concert with his cabinet colleagues, is whether to bring back the suspended development levies. They were suspended. They work out about 15,000 to 20,000 euro per house. There's a total cost to the Exchequer of those levies of about 250 million. By the way, commencements February are up about 85%. So the Department of Housing would say they're working, leave them in place. But they were brought in on a once-off basis to do with escalating interest rates. Those interest rates are subsiding, and does a once-off levy of this nature, rather like the VAT cut for restaurants, become semi-permanent. And that's an immediate decision in advance of the budget for the government.
And that can be done outside the budgetary cycle?
It can, or it could be part of the budget, but however it's done is not the issue. The issue is it must be done. They must either be extended or dropped, and that'll be significant.
Okay. Now, in terms of the one of the promises maybe that they fell short on, and I'm not quite sure how much it can be built up before the general election, was that the promise of social housing stock would be over 50,000 homes in this government. That hasn't happened. I mean, we're nowhere near that.
And we're waiting on the ESRI to come back with new information to revamp the Housing for All plan based on new economic figures of population and need and so forth. So I think a lot of targets after that, when it comes in May, are going to be out of date, are going to be reset. I suppose the thing about targets is that you've got to aim high. If you make substantial progress, it's probably as much as you are going to do. But one target that the government has to meet is in relation to the planning bill, which is the third largest piece of legislation in the history of the state, that has been in committee stage in the Dáil for 100 hours, which is a record. And the issue is, can that bill be completed its progress in committee and then in report and final stage in the Dáil sooner rather than later, but certainly before summer? Because then the whole process has to start again in the Senedd. And mindful of the political timelines I've outlined, which is just a personal view, I could be completely wrong, but there is an issue about whether that mammoth piece of legislation can be got through in the lifetime of this government.
And what would that allow to happen?
Well, it'll make no difference this year. However, it is a foundational piece of work, according to the government, for changing the whole planning system to make it faster, more efficient, so that the very delays that you've just talked about, for example, in relation to social housing, which are a series of lacks of capacity, everything from plumbers and painters to the planning system and the resource of planners in the planning system, that this legislation will be foundational in addressing that going forward.
To what extent, Gerard, and you're like, you know government inside out, and maybe there's a bit of a cynic in me, but to what extent does a government on its way out, you know, or in an election year, give thought to progressing important legislation like that, which maybe they won't get the kudos for when it's enacted by a new government?
Well, I think in relation to this particular piece of legislation, I think there is a lot of commitment. I think Dara O'Brien sees it as a cornerstone of his legacy, and he's now coming to the end of his term. So I do think there will be real political commitment to getting it through.
Okay. And Budget 24, in terms of housing and housing measures for owners and renters, was a little wishy-washy at best. I mean, there was a bit of, you know, tweaking legislation and tax back for people and all that kind of thing. Can anything be done for Budget 25 that would help the rental market in particular? Because that's the one that seems to be really stuck in the mire. We know that the rent credit was given out. It was then doubled. Still, hardly anybody is claiming it for lots and lots of reasons. Any short-term wins that Simon Harris could achieve in the next while?
So I'm a bit frustrated with the question because, of course, you can spend any amount of money any which way and call it a win. The bigger issue, whether these money spent in those ways have actually been productive in terms of their opportunity cost to the housing agenda overall and to other areas of government, has it been money well spent? And there has to be a significant degree of scepticism that these short-term palliative measures do much for anyone except to write a political press release about. And a lot of these subsidies, by the way, and that's what they are, go into the pockets of the providers.
And we've seen that with Help to Buy. We've seen that with shared equity.
Correct.
And both measures have been, you know, I won't say denounced by the central bank, but remarked on that they are of themselves inflationary. They can't be anything but.
Exactly.
But they are politically popular.
They're politically popular, but they're not particularly productive. I think they're wasteful of money and resources. And the problem with housing is capacity. And until that is addressed, you're not going to make progress.
Yeah. Now,
all you do, these subsidies do, is shift one person's opportunity to another at somebody else's cost.
Sure. Now, you might possibly get an outside chance of a call from Simon Harris to come back and advise him over the next year.
I can absolutely reassure you, as bad as the country is, it won't be getting that
bad. You won't
bad.
Be coming to. Well, if he did, what advice would you give him now? Would it be leave well enough alone? Change the housing minister, you know, ramp up this, that, or the other.
He has no say over the housing minister because Dara O'Brien.
It's a Fianna Fáil appointment.
Minister,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So all he can do is manage himself for the next 6 months. In relation to housing, he's got to pick one or two things. In fact, Roderick O'Gorman's initiative a few weeks ago about providing large amounts of state provided modular funding for refugees.
Yeah.
That's a significant housing issue.
On state land
that can be delivered on, not before an election probably, but at least we could see progress, palpable progress on those sites before the people go to the polls. And otherwise on housing, I think the thing is to do is to get that ERSI report back, embed those new projections and put in place a plan that is budgeted for to deliver on the years ahead. Because the most important thing for Simon Harris is when he is leading his party in the election, not as Taoiseach in government, can he persuade people that Fine Gael has a plan that's different? It's not a carbon copy of the government's plans, but it's something different. It has add-ons. It has other aspects that catch the imagination and will make people believe, right, maybe there's something in this. Maybe I should give them a second thought that I was not previously prepared to do so.
Do you think he's the right leader for Fine Gael?
I think he's the only leader for Fine Gael because nobody else was prepared to take the job.
Right, Gerard Helen, we have it there. Thank you for joining us on The Home Show, and we will wait with bated breath to see how many elections and in what time we are going to be exercising our civic duty. Thanks a million, Gerard.
Thank you very much.
And you're very welcome back to The Home Show podcast with me, Sinead Ryan. Now, I promised you earlier on we would do something a little bit retro, a little bit throwback. And I am delighted to welcome back to the studio Queen of Retro and all things to do with style, Natasha Rocca Devine. Natasha, you're very welcome back to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you are a big fan, and we know this, of all things recycling and upcycling and sustainability and all that kind of thing. And it strikes me that I'm old enough to kind of remember the original versions of a lot of this furniture. But they're coming back in. And the whole look, I think, was Mad Men first started.
It's my favourite era of design.
Yeah. Yes. And this idea of mid-century tables and, you know, the kind of the metal and leather chairs and all that kind of thing is really, really bang on trend. But it strikes me that the smartest way to go about it is to buy the original and do it up rather than go out and buy new retro.
Yeah, I think so too. And actually, buying new is actually quite expensive. If you see kind of designer brands, really high end, they're really expensive, the kind of duplicates, the modern version. So absolutely, I think we're blessed now because obviously charity shops and, you know, as I was on the Salvage Squad, I learned so much about charity shops in Ireland, in particular, like Max Salvage Warehouse, Gaff Interiors is the more kind of high end version. And then just your local kind of charity shop or furniture shops wherever you live in Ireland. But really just grabbing something that you like, you're drawn to, I think is so important. You know, not just going, okay, it's on trend or Mad Men. You know, like if you're looking at like a family place or family home, you're not going to get one chair, you know, like a granddad chair that only sits one person. You have to have it adaptable to your home. So really look before you go into any of these shops or online, look for what you need. You know, that way I'd always say that. But like there's so many different options and I think it's really, really stylish. A lot of them are mahogany, which is my favourite type of wood, to be honest. Dark wood I love.
And then some people, it's just brown wood, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then that's where you can, as you said, you can upcycle it and you can kind of sand it and spray it. Like there's so many different ways to kind of upcycle and change the space. And also things like changing the handles, putting wallpaper in the drawers, you know, simple touches, Sinead, are just really effective in kind of bringing that modern touch to these pieces.
Now, one of the most dramatic ways you can change something for not very much money, and I've done it myself, is to kind of have your kitchen cupboards dipped or resprayed, because even if you have that old country pine kind of look that is very out of date now, by smartening that up and maybe painting it a sage green or even black can make a massive difference.
Absolutely. And there's obviously kitchenrespray.com, I think, is the main company in Ireland. But there's there's a lot of different people who do it themselves. It's very much about your skill set. And I've always said this with design, is just be realistic. You know, if you've never done anything like that, you know, definitely look up tutorials if you're going to do this at home. But just like you say, sanding it, spraying it, whether it's professionally or personally, and then adding on new handles and things like that, Sinead, is really clever. But I always bring it back to keep it to the concept of your home. Don't just follow a trend. You know, look at the overall furniture in your space. If you have pops of colour in the couch, make sure it matches the colour you're going for. And also the style, like, as I said, the handles and just simple touches like that can really just massively
make a big difference. Now, what is this? I thought I'd heard of all the trends at this stage. I really did. But you've brought me a new one in today. Hipstoric.
Hipster. I'm not very hipster. So
it's a hipsteric home.
It's essentially what we're just talking about. I think it was like, I feel like this has always been there, but then we put a new label around it. It's a bit like mid-century modern. So in the 1970s, I think a lot of buildings were kind of left idle, a bit like the cupboards where they're, you know, they're not necessarily a, you know, out of use, but they just needed an upcycle. So this new term came about, hipsteric, which is bringing together old and new. And it's very much a kind of a new version of mid-century modern.
So it's like hipster and historic.
Oh, bring it together. And it definitely, you can't just be, you know, bring all the only old in, or you can't just have modern. So it's that delicate balance. And as I said, it has to apply to your style. But I'm not very hipster, just to be clear. So I use this very lightly, this term.
Yeah. Okay. And this is really about that mashup between vintage or vintage looking.
Exactly.
And antiques. And we all have family heirlooms and things
that
don't maybe match a super cool modern home, but in the right place.
Absolutely. And I think I learned, as I said, from the Salvage Squad, I learned so much in this respect because we had to upcycle products. And some of the pieces were stunning, like a family clock. I mean, we worked with professional upcyclers, but like things like family clocks, you know, which people just kind of leave in the corner and don't use, or just, you know, drawers and things, which are actually, if you look back to the furniture, like you said, you remember, are so intricate in their details. The craftsmanship is incredible, if not better in some respects than modern furniture, because, you know, people buy kind of more mainstream. So I think just bringing that kind of meshing together the history and the kind of modern trends. And that's where I would suggest kind of fun colours, like peach fuzz is kind of the Pantone colour of the year, whether you like that or not.
Peach fuzz is
Pantone colour of the year. So say, for example, if you're very hipster or you're looking for something modern, you could put that, spray that on your, you know, your drawers or your clock or something and bring that into your space, or sage green or navy or whatever that colour is that just brings the modern touch. So it just meshes the two together.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned wallpaper there. So let's talk for a little bit about the hipsteric, the type of wallpapers, because they are making a comeback. And I'm talking about very busy wallpaper here. You know, metallics, absolutely, birds of paradise, flowers, plants, absolutely, jungle animals, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, and exactly. And bringing that together. So if you imagine going in, visiting kind of Downton Abbey, let's just say we were popping in there, you know, places like that where the wallpapers were very kind of extravagant and exuberant, and like hummingbirds, and particularly with nature in those cases, or gold. And obviously the more you move into kind of Italian or French design, more golds. So just bringing that into your home. And then I suppose if you put that, for example, in the bathroom against wooden panels, like a very, like say hummingbirds or something really kind of ornate, and then put it against kind of wood and painted that kind of, for example, if it was green wallpaper, then putting elements of green onto your wood or kind of sanding it, and then gold handles. That just brings together like the kind of hipsteric trend of like the old wallpaper style, but then, you know, against kind of modern colours and just keeping it more balanced. So it's not too hectic either.
Yeah, but a bathroom, especially like a downstairs bathroom, can be a room you can have a bit of fun with.
I always say that. I'm actually designing my own house at the moment, and I'm saying the bathroom downstairs, your guest bathroom, is your fun bathroom. It's like a lot of the time it's not a wet room. There's usually not a shower in it. Yeah. So it's really just to go in, use for guests, and, you know, just for everyone to kind of,
so you don't have to worry about it all steaming up.
No,
or
exactly,
anything like that.
Yeah, and okay, wallpaper in particular for that.
Yeah.
And I just think it's for, like in a hotel or in a bar, you always look at the, you know, the bathroom, you know, yeah, if it's really stylish, you remember the bathrooms. And then you can add in fun tiles and things like that. So with tiles, I love tiles. Obviously my family are in tiling. So I love tiles, wood, you know, just bringing together, whether it's wood, paint, tiles, or any kind of fabrics, layering that up with kind of a fun, as you said, exuberant wallpaper. And we've got such a great choice, like online or in Ireland now.
Yeah, now some of those wallpapers, those really specialist ones, can be very expensive.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I presume you're only buying a roll or two. If you're, I mean, would you do, you wouldn't do a whole room in that, or maybe you would.
Well, I've done both. I did an Art Deco apartment for Rob's Wool in Malahide. So I featured walled some of like behind the headboard, and then I painted the restroom dark instead of going light, which a lot of people do,
yeah,
a cream against the wallpaper. I kind of embraced it and made them very Art Deco and kind of dark cigar room, very 1920s, 1930s.
Lovely.
But at the same time, you can lighten it. Like you say, you can have a feature wall. Generally, the standard rule is one roll of wallpaper fits, it goes down three times across like your wall, like in a standard living room, like a standard Irish home. So you would have one roll for three kind of streams going down. But this is very dependent. Like if you have a Georgian house, the ceilings are going to be higher. So, you know, you can really, the best thing about it now is you can measure it up online. A lot of the sites have a way to measure how many rolls you're going to need. And
but you're matching.
Yeah.
You've got something that's heavily patterned.
It's really
like
tricky, Sinead. Exactly. So you have to match the wallpapers, and I learned how to do wallpaper recently. I'm very proud of my wallpapering skills, but it's tricky. And it's also, there's wallpaper that sticks on the wall, or you've put glue on. So it's two types usually,
yeah,
generally. But the patterns are tricky. And if you have a pattern, say if it's suggesting six rolls, I would say get eight, because you're always, or seven.
You're going to have wastage.
Wastage. But then, yeah, you can use the wastage on the inside of drawers and, you know, like for different things. So I'm always.
And another trend now that seems to be nice, although I expect you probably need high walls for this. Would be making like a wallpaper mural in a frame, like it's in beading,
yeah,
like a rectangle or a square.
I've
or
done
something
that before,
like that.
Yeah, in rental apartments.
And you're getting like one strip of the wallpaper, so you're not painting it, but it looks nearly like a fresco.
It is. It's fantastic. And as you said, I think that's really suitable to Georgian houses, like you said, high ceilings, where, you know, it's not taking over. It doesn't look a bit random. It looks like a statement piece. I think it's a great idea. And this is where people, I suppose, a great way to test it before, you know, you change the whole space, because wallpaper is A, tricky, and B, trickier to get off.
Yeah.
So just, you know, it gives you kind of edging into wallpaper. But this is what the fun thing is. I think we're blessed nowadays is you can do anything with design. Like,
and one of the things you can do is texture. Now, I wouldn't be a fan of the old flock wallpaper, you know, yeah, from the 1970s. But you can go further back than that and you can find real texture on wallpapers nowadays.
Absolutely. And also there's a lot of brands, so sustainable brands that are making them, the products completely sustainable. So, you know, like back in the day in the Queen and King's houses, they were, you know, you could literally feel the lumps on the wallpaper. Mm. It was so textured. Nowadays, people are making, brands in the UK and Ireland and across the world are making kind of sustainable products, and then you can paint over it yourself. So you can stick it on and then paint over, you know, and then each year change the colour. So okay, there's a lot of different ways nowadays to kind of work with wallpaper in a fun and a sustainable way.
Okay, that's brilliant. So that is on trend at the moment. And then there's another one called Hummingbird Hues. Now, you mentioned this earlier. I think this is a lovely idea.
I think it's gorgeous.
But
it reminds
it's
you of
very,
the old...
very, I mean, we're talking retro here. You're going back to like the 18th century retro.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Cole and Son kind of have their new collection in the UK. And I studied design in England, so I'm always kind of in tune with the, what their, you know, their suggestions. But I think Ireland, I just think of the old castles and, you know, the beautiful, our beautiful estates around Ireland. And you're going in and the hallways have these gorgeous prints and then walking straight into the garden and things like that. So I think Hummingbird Bird could be used in, you know, in a retro way, or it could be used in a very posh way. Mm. So, and either or, it's very hipsteric. It's very, it's very hipster. But yeah, you could use it, like you said, you could frame it. You could put it on the top of a unit. You could put it under, on a table and put glass on top of it.
Okay.
And then put a matching rug. You could do a feature wall. You could do a downstairs bathroom, or you could do kind of panels, you know, the top of the panels have the hummingbird. And I think you could match.
Or inside it, kind of a glass bookcase at the
absolutely
back.
Absolutely. It's a yeah, really good idea. Yeah. So, and that's another thing with kitchen respray. You could put that inside, you know, with your glasses behind the kind of glass unit, and then have your gorgeous, you know, your wine glass, etc., in front of it. So
fabulous.
There's so many different ways to do this. And if, you know, as you said, you can make it more hipster and have it kind of in a kid's bedroom or in a library or a playroom. So we're very lucky, like, as I said, there's so many choices, whether it's Cole and Son or wallpaper.ie or Graham and Brown or like Next, like so many different brands and different affordable rates for people. And it's fun. I mean, I definitely would say before you do wallpaper, test it at home, pick a small area, you know, or a table, trial it out before, you know, particularly with patterns. But it is a great way, you know, to bring any space to life.
Yeah. And if you're going to spend a lot of money, perhaps punt out for an expert to put it up for you. Maybe.
Exactly. I would definitely say invest in someone.
Natasha, thank you so much for all of those ideas. Will you put them up, some of them on your Instagram?
Definitely.
Okay. And Natasha Rockadivine is the Instagram there. And it's always a fabulous source of inspiration for our listeners. So do check it out. And we're delighted to have you back, Natasha. And we'll see you next time you're in as well. Now, that is all we have time for, folks, this week. We've had a good mix of stuff, a bit of the political and a bit of the design. If there's a topic you'd like us to cover or a guest that you think you'd like to hear on The Home Show, we'll get in touch with us and let us know. That's thehomeshow@newstalk.com, or you can DM me over on Instagram at SineadRyan100, and we are here for all of those suggestions, and we love getting them indeed. Thanks to producer Aidan McKelvey. Stephen McClune was on sound this week, and have a fantastic weekend. We will be back here next Saturday at 8 a.m. and we'll talk to you then.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan, Saturday morning at 8 on News Talk.